When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Oh, he hit 239 with 8 home runs and 30 runs batted in. Well hit fly ball deep to right field. Forget it, it's going to go. There it goes. Home run.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Call his wife and hey,
405. McMonagle here with you on this Wednesday morning. We're celebrating one victory and hopefully getting ready for another as the New York Mets took care of business yesterday against the Milwaukee Brewers 8-4. The offense does what it does, man, as it continues to bounce back every time the Brewers tried to take advantage, like they did in the first inning. And Severino, who was obviously a key figure in this game, got off to a little bit of a shaky start, ultimately finishes strong, but gets off to a little bit of a shaky start, gives up 2 runs in the first, and immediately, after going kind of meekly in the first inning, where Peralta, the pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, goes through them, 1-2-3 in the second inning, down 2 runs, they come right back. Vientos with a leadoff single. He talked about how nervous he was heading into this game. It didn't look it with a leadoff single. Alonso, who hasn't done much, gets a walk to set up first and second. Nobody out for Winker, who drives one into the right field corner, scores both runs, and immediately, the Mets have tied the game. They're talking trash. They got a runner at third as Winker was yelling at Willy Adames. He got a runner at third, less than 2 outs. They get the sacrifice fly in, and suddenly they're up 3-2. Severino gets through the third after getting a double play from Rhys Hoskins, a Met killer, and then the fourth gives up another 2, and bam! The offense bounces right back with a huge 5-run inning in a position where they were, after one great play up against the wall by the Chirinos, the left fielder, another misplay on a double, but ultimately 2 outs, runner at second, still down 1, no run in, and Iglesias comes through again with another infield single on a sharp ground ball to first. The pitcher doesn't cover first base. Run scores as Tyrone Taylor runs all the way around. And then they add another 4 runs doing what this team does. Base hit, base hit, base hit, infield single. Pinch hit from J.D. Martinez with a 2-run single to really blow the game open. And that point on, the real critical moment of the game, where Mendoza trusted Severino. And Severino, if you look at it, 6 innings, 4 runs, not a stat line that you're overly impressed with in a playoff game, but ultimately, with this bullpen a little bit, you know, light, considering what they had to do to get in here, he went back out there, the manager showed faith in him, and he pitched a clean 5th, and he pitched a clean 6th, before they went to Buto in the 7th and 8th, and then finally went to Stanek, and the Milwaukee Brewers did not put another runner on after their 2 runs in the 4th inning. And Severino stood up right there because, yeah, listen, would you love a shutout? Yes. Would you love a great performance from the opening pitch to the end of his innings? Yes. But ultimately, he was given a lead in the 5th inning. The manager showed faith in him, and he went out there and pitched his ass off for 2 innings and got them in a position where their bullpen was rested enough, just enough, to throw Buto out there and get through the rest of the game. And really, that's the difference in the game, where the manager for the Milwaukee Brewers had their ace, who had a clean 3rd and 4th, gave up some runs in the second, but had a clean 3rd and 4th inning and retired the last 9 batters he faced. And the second they got the lead, he didn't give his starting pitcher, Peralta, the opportunity to hold that lead the way Mendoza gave Severino the opportunity. He pulls him, goes to his bullpen, and the Mets pounce. And this Met team that has consistently bounced back, whether it's against bad losses, whether it's, you know, situations where it seems like they're falling apart and relievers are throwing their gloves in the air, they need team meetings, they're down 11 games under 500, whatever the case may be, they always bounce back. the injury to Lindor and his back. Oh, yeah, sure. No, Acuna will come up and be terrific and we'll win 6 out of 7. They always seem to bounce back, but they do it in-game as well. And I love the idea that never was any momentum allowed to build for the Milwaukee Brewers. None. As soon as they score 2, boom, we answer with 3. As soon as they take it a 4-3 lead, boom, we answer with 5. And away the Mets go. And now they are set up in a position right now with Manaea on the mound tonight, who has undoubtedly been their best starting pitcher over the last few months, up against the guy we know here. If you're a Yankee fan, you remember Frankie Montas and that horrendous trade for the hurt pitcher that was Frankie Montas. Well, he's back. And although he's healthy, he's not pitching very well for the Milwaukee Brewers over the last month. He was a trade acquisition at the deadline, and he hasn't been pitching that well, but he'll go game 2. So you feel good about the pitching matchup. You like where this offense is. The bullpen is more rested now, a day off. You'll have your closer. You'll have Maton available. And it just feels like right now this team can't be denied. And it's just a matter of time. The game starts at 7:30 tonight, and it feels like it's just a matter of time before the Mets take care of business tonight, sweep away the Milwaukee Brewers, and get ready for a series Saturday against Philadelphia. That's what we're all hoping for. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. We also have the Jet conversation, as obviously Aaron Rodgers and his old teammate, Devontae Adams, he has now asked for a trade out of Vegas and out of the Raiders after long speculation, even last year, going back to last year. I mean, he came over to the Raiders to play with his buddy Derek Carr, and Carr is no longer here. Last year was a disaster, and even though they made the head coaching change, it seems like even now he's having a problem with his new head coach in Pierce. So he's asked for the trade. They've admitted that they're willing to shop him. They want a second-round pick. So should the Jets do it? I think so. I think you have to at this point. I was hesitant to do it earlier on when this was being rumored over the course of last year and into the offseason, because I believe they had enough talent in the room. I believe they had enough weapons in the room, and I thought that it might stunt the growth and relationship of Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson. But clearly, with both the play on the field and the comments made by Garrett Wilson to Bart Scott, it sounds like the relationship isn't going so well. Garrett Wilson hasn't made big plays. Rodgers has been relying much more on Lazard and Mike Williams than he has Garrett Wilson. And even, let's be honest, even both running backs in the past game, Breece Hall certainly. And it just feels like the connection there hasn't panned out. I thought it would already be there. And the fact of the matter is, this is a must-win now team, and they don't have time to make sure they can figure out the relationship and the chemistry between their star young wide receiver and Aaron Rodgers. I thought it would be there already. It's not. I think you have to make sure you get someone in this building who can help them win right now, and I think Devontae Adams does that. It doesn't mean that Garrett Wilson can't become more part of the offense. He needs to be, no matter who's here. But he's unhappy. He's doing interviews with Bart Scott, complaining about the complexity or lack thereof of the offense. You've got Aaron Rodgers and the situation with the head coach and whether or not they're at odds. I just heard in the promo, Boomer doesn't think they're speaking. Aaron Rodgers is telling Pat McAfee that everything is wonderful. There's always something going on with the Jets. It's amazing. They are a planet. I used this analogy before. I was trying to think of another one, but I'm just going to use this one. They are literally a planet that has a gravitational pull of crap. And they have all these, it's just this, these stories and crap just rotating around them like satellites. And I don't know when it's going to end or if it's ever going to end. I thought Aaron Rodgers coming here playing was going to do it. But you know what? When you can't score 11 points to beat the Broncos, here comes more crap. And here comes disgruntled wide receivers, which is a calling card of the NFL. Here comes doubt in the relationship between the two most important men in the franchise, the head coach and the quarterback. Here comes whether or not they should trade for another great player to add to this superstar-laden roster that hasn't performed the way it should. I mean, it's just, it never ends. Can the Jets just go out there and win a freaking game? Can they go out to London and just beat the crap out of Minnesota and ease everybody's tension? I'd love that. Just go out there and just absolutely whoop the 4-0 Minnesota Vikings and Sam Darnold and quell everybody's concerns and fears about this team moving forward, because I can't take this anymore. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to your calls. Let's go to Jude in Secaucus. What's up, Jude?
Hey, how doing?
How did I not say, hey, Jude? How did I not do that?
I never heard that. Well, you destroyed my Archmanic theory last week.
So. I'm sorry to hear that. How did I not say
that? How do you feel about Rodgers? You think he's got something, you know, he's holding back a little bit at home playing on that turf?
Injury-wise? Achilles-wise?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Just on that. Everybody always complains about that turf. You know,
He played his best game of the year against New England on that turf, and he moved a little bit. He moved much better.
It was dry.
He didn't play well. He didn't throw the ball well in the rain. I was surprised how it really felt like the rain was an issue for him when I don't remember it. I mean, I saw someone say that if you look back on the last handful of years, he has had trouble in wet weather. I know his last year he was winning MVPs. It couldn't have been that much of a problem.
It's just the MetLife turf. He was holding back a little bit.
I understand what you're saying. I don't agree, Jude. I don't know if that. I mean, it could have been the weather plus the turf. I understand that. He played great against the Patriots on that turf. I just think he was uncomfortable the whole game. I don't know if he was holding back or. If he was, I don't know if it's the turf or the weather or whatever the case may be. He wasn't throwing the ball well either. It wasn't even just like he wasn't moving well. He wasn't throwing the ball well. He was inaccurate. A bunch of throws at people's feet. Miscommunications with both the offensive line, the cadence, and his wide receivers. Like, just, it was an absolute mess. And that's why it's frustrating for me to just, or I shouldn't say frustrating for me. It's just easy to blame Saleh, man. I was saying this the other night. While clearly, coaching is an issue, and the penalties are an issue, and everything we've seen with this team since Saleh's been here is an issue. By no means am I saying Robert Saleh isn't the problem necessarily, but it's just so easy to just come in here and lay it at his feet when Aaron Rodgers, to me, he's the assistant coach of the team. When I say the coaching staff is a problem, I include the quarterback in this situation. With him on this team, he is part of the coaching staff. He's part of the offensive coaching staff. And he said it to Pat McAfee, and I was saying it last night. The cadence is on him. And those pre-snap penalties, I said last year, when they were having pre-snap penalty after pre-snap penalty with that offense, I said they're gonna evaporate when Aaron Rodgers is here. I mean, that's what the cadence of Aaron Rodgers and getting people off sides and free plays and, you know, catching teams and substitutions and getting 12 men on the field. Like, this is what he specializes in. As well as great throws and everything, but he specializes in making calls at the line, being a smart football player, making those plays, drawing those penalties. That's what he does. So last year I remember saying, well, I know Robert Saleh isn't helping, but the second you have Aaron Rodgers instead of Zach Wilson, who I'm not sure knows where the hell he is right now, you're going to eliminate all those pre-snap penalties. So when they have them, I'm sorry, but it's on the quarterback, and he says as much. It's on the players, and it's on him. Robert Saleh is not the coach of the offense. Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers are the coaches of the offense. So he played terribly. The coaching was poor. He's part of the coaching staff. We can blame Saleh. He deserves his fair share. So does the quarterback. So does the offensive coordinator. So does Breece Hall. So do the players. So does the offensive line. So does Smith. So does the young rookie Fashanu making his first NFL start. I mean, they all played poorly. But my main aspect of it is we could blame the coach, and we could talk about whether or not they have the right coach, whether or not they have a leader of men, whether or not they have whatever we want to talk about with this head coach and what he's shown us over the last handful of years, which clearly isn't enough. Here's the one thing I'll say. When they bring in Aaron Rodgers, when you make that decision to bring Aaron Rodgers into your franchise, I don't care who the coach is, the offense should play well enough to overcome 10 points from the other team. That's it. I don't care if you or I are the head coach. Honestly, I don't care. whoever the coach is, if the defense gives up 10 points, Aaron Rodgers needs to win that game. 888-808-1019. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Chris, the phones are working. What's happening, buddy?
They are working.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
First of all, I know you're going to freak out, but I would grab John Gruden to make him coach ASAP. I know because of that comment that he made.
Tons of them through email, yes.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure if you go through everybody's comments throughout the world, I'm pretty sure there's a few that everybody says that's kind of,
I understand that, but they're not the head coach of professional football teams who try to cater to a fan base, but okay.
You were banging the pom-poms for the Jets since day one.
I certainly have been. That's a fair statement.
Starting to lower them down a little bit below your shoulders, and you're not pumping them up so high anymore. But can we get some facts out? They're not a Super Bowl team. They're not an AFC championship team,
okay.
And they're not a division winning team. Can we agree on those three so far?
No, well, I mean, first, I just love the idea that you say, let's throw some facts out there and then out come three opinions. But sure.
Those are not facts. Really, by week four, you can't make a fact that they're
not. No, absolutely not. No, of course not. No. Of course not. You think you can make a fact that they're not playing?
What part of their team is Super Bowl?
What's that?
What part of their team is Super Bowl worthy talking?
Not at the moment. I think their offense will be. I think their offense
I think their offense will be.
It isn't right now. I have faith that it will be. I think their defense is okay. They gave up 10 points last week. I know it's the lousy Broncos, but we'll see what they do against.
See the way Bo Nix was throwing the ball, he could barely grip the ball.
I totally agree. And it was raining too. On top of that, but they shut down the Patriots. We'll see. They had a bad week one. Tennessee also has a poor quarterback making.
All I want to know is all the experts.
Let's see what happens.
All the experts that, not talking about you, but all the experts that have the team at 13-4 or 14-3, when they come back from this little travel that's going on, when they come back and they already got their four losses, I want to know what the big mouths are saying then.
I know. Well, that's part of it. I mean, did anybody have the Minnesota Vikings 4-0? Did anybody, like, the NFL plays itself out like this? What do you did you think the Minnesota Vikings were a Super Bowl team before week one started? Like, it is how it is. Did we think that the Cincinnati Bengals would be 1-3? Like, I still see issues. I know they just beat up on the Bills. I mean, the Bills just got beat up by Baltimore. I still don't know if Baltimore's defense is as good. I don't think their offensive line is as good. Like, Kansas City right now, you're going to tell me they're a Super Bowl team? They don't have a wide receiver. I know they have Patrick Mahomes, but things change. We'll find out. They're 2-2. They're not dead because they have Aaron Rodgers. We'll see. I had the pom-poms up. Totally agree. Do I feel worse about this team than I did before last week? Yeah. But I also felt better about them than I did at the start of the year after watching that performance against New England. Like, we forget, we act like that didn't happen. I know it was 2 weeks ago, and it's what you do for me lately, and Sunday was particularly awful. But Thursday against the Patriots happened. Aaron Rodgers did look like that. The offensive game plan did look like that. The Patriots aren't, you know, they're a bad team, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to tell you they're a great team, but their defense has been, you know, the Seahawks were 3-1 and scored how many points against the Lions the other night, and were in a battle with the Lions, had to go to overtime against the Patriots. Patriots beat the Bengals. And the Jets absolutely took them out behind the woodshed. Let's see how this game looks against the Minnesota Vikings. Maybe it's ugly and we're really feeling down on the Jets. Maybe they lose a tight one and we're still not feeling great. Or maybe they go out there and kick the crap out of Minnesota. I have no idea. All of that's on the table. All of that's on the table. Danny and Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, Dan?
No good. I was reading something recently about Verdugo and Dominguez, and I know they haven't decided fully who's going to start in left field, but just looking at the numbers and the experience, I know Dominguez, you know, he's not a finished product yet. That's what they're saying. So, honestly, in my opinion, I think Verdugo would be better in left field. What do you think?
Who do I think is going to play? Who do I think is going to be better in left field specifically?
Yeah, for the postseason.
I mean, well, obviously for the postseason. Yeah, I thought you were asking me who's going to be a better. I think they're going to go. I still think they're going to go Dominguez. I know the defense. I think they feel like they can bring in the defense late in the game with Verdugo. If they take a lead, they can bring him in as a defensive replacement. I know it's scary out there. He's made some plays. If you look at it, plain and simple, when the Yankees lose, they don't hit. And Verdugo hasn't hit for a long time. And while Dominguez hasn't really established himself the way he did for the 8 games last year, he's a clearly better offensive player who brings a speed dynamic. It's just, I'll take my chances that a fluky fly ball isn't dropped. So I think, because it's what I would do, and I do think they played him enough. It's not like they banished him once he had the, they still threw him out there, and they played him in left field, and they would, when they played both, they move Verdugo to right. Like, I think they're going to go Dominguez, and I think they're going to go Cabrera at first. And that's subject to change. They don't have a long leash, either one of them. But I think that's probably where the Yankees are going to go.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown. Wow, what a catch by the rookie.
Ridiculous.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:32. So when you get these big games, playoff games for the New York Mets, which here, just to appease all the Yankee fans killing me on Twitter for, you know, this disgusting display of Met positivity, let me just throw out the one line. When you get these Met playoff games that don't come around too often, there you go. You feel better? We turn to the great broadcast team. And we turn to the great broadcaster, Howie Rose. And I want to hear some of the calls. We haven't really played them all morning. I wanted to hear a couple of them. But let's just go through the rally. I want to hear the triple, the Iglesias infield single, Vientos, a bunch of, obviously, the J.D. Martinez. Let's see what we have here. Let's listen to Howie Rose on Odyssey. I knew I wrote it down somewhere. I got it. On Odyssey Mets Radio. Yeah, you wouldn't think I'd have a problem remembering that. All right, here's Howie Rose on Odyssey Mets Radio.
Here's the payoff pitch. Swinging a liner to right field. Base hit. It's going to head towards the right field corner. Vientos turns third. He'll score. Alonso to third. He's going to be waved in. The ball slow coming out of the corner. The cutoff throw is dropped. And going all the way to third is Winker. 2-run score. And the Mets have come right back. And isn't that their mantra? They've come right back to tie the game 2-2. Winker is now at third with nobody out. 3-1. Here it comes to Marte. Swinging a drive in the air to straightaway center. Mitchell going back. It'll score a run. Mitchell makes the one-hand catch as he backpedals onto the warning track. Winker tags. Scores from third. Sacrifice fly for Marte. The Mets are leading by a score of 3-2. Hyams first pitch to Iglesias. Hit hard towards first. Diving stop by the first baseman. Hoskins flips to the bag. Safe. And now all the way around to score is Taylor. Hoskins went into a dive. Made the play. The pitcher, Piamps, was on his way to the bag to take the throw, but coming around third and never hesitating was Taylor, and he brings home the tying run. It's 4-4. 4-4, bases loaded, two out on the fifth. First pitch, line the other way, base hit right field. Lindor is in, Iglesias being waved in. Frilich's throw to the plate, not in time. Sliding in safely is Iglesias, 5-3 New York. Nimmo goes to third. Vientos on it, first with a two-run single, his second hit of the game. Now the pitch, breaking ball, hit on the ground, right side, base hit, right field. Nimmo is in, Vientos around third, coming to the plate. The throw goes to third, two-run score, stopping at second is Alonso. J.D. Martinez with a two-run single, and the Mets have put up a five spot here in the fifth inning. They go in front of the Brewers, 8-4. Many in this crowd standing. The ones behind the third base dugout, clad in blue, waving orange towels. They're the Mets fans. They're the ones making the noise. Here's the 1-2 to Terang. Swung on and missed strike three. Got him with a split. Put it in the books. The New York Mets have come into Milwaukee and taken the opener of this best-of-three wild-card series. They fell behind early, but in 2024 Mets fashion, they didn't just come back. They came right back, fell behind again, came right back once more, and the Mets are in the driver's seat here in Milwaukee.
Yeah, those are fun. This is the excitement in Howie's voice. The final call, too, of a game that was kind of ho-hum. I know it's obviously a playoff victory. You got to have a big-time feel for it, but that it wasn't like any pressure to that. That game was well decided by that point. And still the excitement. And he's talking about the same thing I've been talking about. Mainly, the bounce-back ability in-game coming right back after the other team scores runs. We obviously saw it on full display Monday in that first game of the doubleheader, and we saw it in the first game of this wild card. And it's not even so much getting back into the game, right, or taking the lead. It's not allowing the other team to build momentum. These games are so built on momentum, right? You can feel it. In the game Monday, both games had the pitcher not covering first base, obviously on different levels. Last night, the pitcher was just a little late getting there, and you could tell he jumped off the mound way too late, but almost got there, and obviously Diaz just didn't show up. But those kind of plays, it builds momentum of an inning. And it's no mistake that play leads to four more runs after it, right? Not only does Taylor come around from second base and score on that play, but it leads to four more two-out runs. Like, momentum is so big in these games. And so far, in the two games that have mattered for the Mets that they've played in this, you know, postseason, sort of, they have not allowed, you know, especially late in the game, where they bounce back after these innings and they come right back and score runs and they build their own momentum, and they didn't let Milwaukee deal with any prosperity for a minute in this game. Not for a minute. I mean, that's why that kind of performance is so big, because as these zeros were to mount, you would start to get nervous. And for your first playoff game, if you're Vientos, you know, your first playoff game with the New York Mets, the zeros start to mount. And a team that, you know, lost the wild card series 2 years ago, a lot of those guys remember it. Like, you don't want to have to deal with trying to come back. Their bullpen was locked and loaded and ready to go. They've been rested while you've been playing. And the last thing you want to do is let a three-run deficit continue to sit there, or, you know, a two-run lead from Milwaukee continue to sit there, especially with the starting pitcher in Severino having to go out there. And he made big pitches. Like, it wasn't, you know, he made big pitches. He had first and third and one out with, you know, Rhys Hoskins, their nemesis, up at the plate. And he got a big double play. He made pitches to get out of the jam in the first, though bases loaded. He left five runners stranded in the first three innings. And then really the key for Severino was the fifth and the sixth. That's where, you know, that's where the start becomes a legitimately good start. To take that lead, yes, it's a four-run lead, but to now not even allow a base runner over the next two innings, and then have the bullpen you did have, the Buto-Stanek combination that was ready to pitch in this game, get in there in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. So the Mets are set up for tonight. They have the better pitching matchup. Manaea, who's been great for this team and who has done everything you could have possibly asked him to do. He's had, you know, more starts into the seventh inning in the second half than almost any other pitcher in baseball. and you're lined up right now with all of the momentum and all the pressure on the Brewers against, you know, Frankie Montas, and right now a team that you just feel like at any moment can break out for 5-6 runs in an inning and at any moment can come back. It's really, and especially when you can take into account in this new format, so many of these series have been sweeps. You got to feel good about the New York Mets right now.
Talk New York sports on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 4:46 in the morning of this Wednesday morning. As we get ready for Mets, we also just get ready for playoff baseball. I love it. I'll be into all the games. I was yesterday. We got Tigers-Astros game 2 at 2:30. And I have to tell you, I'm not above the idea that I can be a hypocrite sometimes. And I don't know how I feel. I'm torn on this because I've always said, it was easy to say it last year when the Yankees weren't in it. It was easy to say this. But a part of me does feel like this, and I know it's bizarre. I don't want the Astros to end without getting them. Like, I really do feel that way. I don't want them to just go away. I didn't want them to miss the playoffs. I don't want them to get swept in the wild card series by the Tigers. Because if that happens, are they special? Like, maybe they could they'd have to win 100 games next year or something. But, like, if they do that, If they feel like they had this miserable first half, and only because the freaking Seattle Mariners are just garbage, they find a way to win a division with 88 wins, and they get swept in the wild card round by the Tigers in 2 games. Even if the Yankees get them next year, isn't it over? Well, it still feels good. And I know I shouldn't be hung up on that, but a part of me feels that way. I certainly felt that way last year. I wanted them back in at the very least the ALCS. I wanted that streak alive because I did want my chance at them. And while I'll say that and I feel that way, I don't feel like I'm lying when I say it. When I watch the games, if I wasn't the biggest freaking Tigers fan, like, I can't help my, how do I root for the Astros? When I watch the games, I was all over. I bet Skubal and the Tigers, just because I was getting them, even whatever you thought yesterday was an easy Tigers bet. I'm getting the best pitcher in the sport at plus 130 or whatever it was. That's just an easy bet. It's baseball, and I got the best pitcher in the sport on the mound that I'm getting odds. Like, no matter how you felt about the game, that was just an easy wager. Happened to be true, but I was sitting there, and that obviously had some extra element. I mean, I didn't bet a lot of money on it. I don't have a lot of money. But so I was definitely rooting for them because I would have won my bet. But also, I can't root on the Astros. So I'll say that, you know what? Even if they get past the Tigers, good. Good. Because I still want them to be the Astros when the Yankees take them down. And I want a taste of them. And I want sweet revenge. And I mean that truly. But when I watch the games, boy, do I hope they just absolutely crawl into a ball and cry in the corner and lose. And I think they have an opportunity to. I mean, I think they're going to win this game, but I think there's a chance they lose the series. I think the Royals are going to take care of business with the Orioles. I really do. I think the Orioles just aren't a very good team yet. I've been saying this for a while. One, their pitching staff's in disarray and injured. Eflin's been pretty good, but Lugo's been better. And I don't trust this lineup. I don't trust this team. I don't trust this bullpen that's had his injuries issues as well. So I think it's going to be Yankees-Royals. And again, Yankees-Royals, and then waiting on the winner of Cleveland and Detroit? That's about as easy a path to the World Series that the Yankees have ever had. Like, ever. So I don't want to get my hopes up, because all that will mean is if they lose, it'll be even worse. That would be an embarrassing loss. You have to admit. If the Yankees lose to the Royals, that's it. Forget about it. Pack. I don't know what you do. I honestly don't know what you do. I don't know if you could bring back Boone. I don't see how you could. The owner would have to be furious and do something. I don't know. But they don't do that. So I have no idea what they would do. They would hang on the fact that they won 94 games and won a division and had the best record in the American League? Maybe. It's probably what they would do. But that would be as disgusting a loss as humanly possible. I can't imagine it worse than losing to the Royals. If they get lucky and both the Astros and the Orioles are knocked off in the wild card round, the Yankees have no excuse not to get back to the World Series. Just have no excuse. Bernadette in Oceanside. Hello, Bernadette.
Good morning, Chris. How
good
are you?
Good morning to you. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I am so happy that the Mets pulled this out last
yes.
night. As you know, I grew up with a bunch of Mets fans.
Right.
But my loyalty is to the Yankees and always will be, like you. But I will never root against a New York franchise. Never. If they're the only ones in it, then I will root for them wholeheartedly. But now that the Yankees and the Mets are in it together, I mean, I'll still root for the Mets, yes, but my Yankees are in my heart.
Well, of course. Like, I'm the same way. People can't understand that right now. I don't really want to talk about what I'm rooting for. It doesn't matter. But people are very upset with me for being so, you know, pro or seemingly happy. I'm supposed to be miserable, I suppose. I should sit here and begrudgingly talk about how, and yet again, the Mets have won a big game and they'll probably win the stupid series, but who cares? They suck. Like, I don't know. I guess that's what I should be doing here. I really don't know.
Well, I feel like everyone in New York, I mean, Craig used to go around and Met fans for Yankees.
Yes.
You know, when
when they took on Philadelphia, absolutely. Mets fans for Yankees.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And, you know, I will do nothing but root for the Mets until it's time for me to, on Thursday, root for the Yankees.
Well, yeah, on Saturday, root for the Yankees. Well, you could do both. I'm rooting for both up until if they meet in the World Series. That's it. I want these games. Doesn't anybody get it? I want to wake up tomorrow at 2 o'clock to put on 2:15, set my alarm, and watch the Astros-Tigers. I want to watch the Mets at 7:30 against the Brewers. I want to see Kyle Higashioka, the home run stroker. I mean, if you think about it, how many Yankees? And again, that's the most enjoyable one, to watch Kyle Higashioka, who couldn't come through with a big hit for the Yankees to save their lives. I mean, Kyle Higashioka and King shutting down the Braves and hitting home runs. I mean, that's easy. That one's easy. That doesn't bother us at all. We got Juan Soto in that deal. That's fine. That's easy to root for. Those are two guys who, you know, Higashioka was in the organization for, like, I think it was 72 years. So he's been there forever. And Michael King established himself 2 years ago as one of the better short relievers in the sport, always wanted to close, much like Seth Lugo. You saw King last night. You'll see Seth Lugo today. Guys who have proven themselves as back end of the bullpen, reliable guys, but who wanted to be starters and now are having great years. I mean, King's the game one starter, and they clinched a while ago. They could have set this up any way they wanted. I know Darvish has had some injuries and stuff, but they could have set this up as any way they wanted. They put Michael King out there for game one. And he had 12 strikeouts and completely dominated the Braves. So, I mean, that was fun. The one that wasn't so much fun is Trey Sweeney getting RBI, you know, singles against the Astros. As I'm not sure the Yankees ever had an RBI single against the Astros in the postseason, let alone a guy they jettisoned for a relief pitcher with the Dodgers isn't going to make the postseason roster, that's been off the team for 2 months. And he's with Detroit now, starting shortstop, base hits up the middle to drive in runs to beat the Astros. That one is frustrating for New York Yankees fans. That's a tough one. To watch a kid they drafted, we heard about, we were supposed to believe in, we were paying attention to. I went and watched Hudson Valley 2 years ago. I saw Trey Sweeney hit. I also saw a wedding, which was an interesting promotion. It's not too often in between innings you have father-daughter dances. Unique. They cut the cake, the whole thing. That was the promotion the night I went to the Hudson. I saw a bunch of people there. I saw Trey Sweeney, who's now hitting base hits for the Tigers. I saw Emmanuel Babari, who now calls games for, it's like, now calls Yankee games, or was, until John decided to come back. I saw a minor league wedding. That was the promotion. I'm not kidding. They had someone won a free wedding in a previous promotion, and that the night I went was the wedding. And before the game, they had the ceremony, and then in between innings, they did every stage of a wedding. Like, between the first and second inning was the bride and groom, the best man and maid of honor speech. Then they had the dance. Then they had the cutting of the cake. They had, like, every part of the ceremony in between the innings. And she was in, like, a wedding dress, and he was in, like, you know, a short sleeve plaid button down and a pair of khaki shorts. I was just like, this is great. This is perfect. I saw Jason Dominguez. I saw all those guys. And hopefully Jason Dominguez can do the same thing Trey Sweeney did and actually have an impact in a playoff game. And that's really the big question here for the New York Yankees, as we will finish our Yankee Hot Stove Hour with a little Yankee talk, because we have spent, I don't know, 5 hours on the Mets. And the Yankees play here too, damn it. And they'll be playing on Saturday. There's two major question marks with the New York Yankees right now, which is typically not what you like heading into a postgame series, a postseason series, not what you want. I honestly do not know who's going to be the starting first baseman, and I honestly do not know who's going to be the starting left fielder. And you would think I'd be more uncomfortable with that. But it is what it is. And to me, the answer is always offense. Especially in the postseason, especially with this team that has failed over and over again to score runs in the postseason. And I was listening to an Athletic baseball podcast called Rates and Barrels. And they were talking about the different elements of a team and tendencies inside winning postseason teams. So, like, they were showing tendencies of teams that have made it to the World Series. And believe it or not, the tendencies of the postseason teams, more than any other element, they tend to be better than average offensive teams. You'd be surprised how many teams make it to the World Series over the course of the regular season being a less than average pitching team, a less than average speed team, a less than average defensive team. But more than anything else, if you're going to make it to the World Series, you got to be a more than average offensive team. And so that's why any decision needs to be made by the Yankees, offense. Who's your left fielder? Jason Dominguez. Who's your first baseman? Over the course of this season for the New York Yankees, Oswaldo Cabrera, certainly left-handed, has been that answer. So I'm hoping that's what they do. As we get ready for that series, but we get ready for a Mets playoff game tonight. Manaea back on the mound for the New York Mets, looking to rebound off his one bad start, and I think he will. I hope to be with you again tonight, midnight, celebrating with you Met fans as they sweep the Milwaukee Brewers. Let's hope it's true. I'll catch you then. Thank you for calling. I'm out of here. Bye-bye.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.